They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew, Radio Fairfax. And joining us today on The Commons, we have an old friend of ours, Marjorie Murray. Marjorie is the founder and president of the Center for California Homeowner Association Law, and she has done an absolutely incredible job in California. Lots going on, so Marjorie, thank you so much. It's been a while getting you back on here, but I'm so glad to have you today.
Thank you very much, Sue. It's a pleasure to be with you and to talk about some of the things that are going on in California. So why don't you give me an idea of what you think your listeners would be interested in this morning? There's a lot to talk about in terms of court cases and also legislation that we have worked on this legislative session. So let me know how you would like to start.
Well, we can start anywhere you would like to go. We'll start with that. We've got two cases that we're going to talk about. So we've kind of whet everybody's appetite on those. And those are cases that homeowners have won, correct?
Yes.
And also, you've been working very hard and very diligently for a number of years trying to get homeowner-friendly legislation enacted in California. So you want to tell us a little bit about what you did, and then we'll come to the lawsuits?
Well, we can do both in one in conjunction with the other. Why don't I talk about one of the first lawsuits, and that would be a natural segue into the legislation.
All right.
Because the Diamond case, the name of this case is Diamond v. Casa del Valle Homeowners Association. It comes out of Santa Clara County, which is in Northern California. And, in fact, one of the cases comes out of Northern California, the other out of Southern California.
Okay.
So I'm going to talk about two cases. The first one here has to do with assessment collection and foreclosure. And as you know, that has been a perennial issue across the country.
Yeah.
Very difficult to deal with, very difficult to solve. And foreclosure and assessment collection is our top priority here at the center. That's the reason we founded this center, was to get in place new legislation which would protect homeowners during the assessment collection process. So the facts of this case will sound very familiar to homeowners. Arlene Diamond is the homeowner's name. She's a senior. The association levied a special assessment on all the homeowners. The assessment amount was $9,750, so close to 10 grand. She failed to pay it. She fell behind, even though she thought she had a payment plan. That's one of the critical facts in this case. And we see this a lot, where homeowners believe they have struck a payment plan agreement with the association and then are told later, either by the debt collector or the association law firm, but no, there is no evidence that any payment plan was put in place, which is what happened to her. In any event, the association proceeded with a judicial foreclosure, and I'm going to underscore that because we are seeing this more and more frequently, that associations throughout the state, instead of using non-judicial foreclosure, are using judicial foreclosure, which is much more expensive.
Why are they doing that, Marjorie? Any idea?
Well, I think there are probably a number of reasons for it. The one that comes to mind, which was an issue in this case, is that the attorney's fees are greater. Ordinarily, non-judicial foreclosure involves a debt collector, a debt collection law firm, a debt collection company, but not necessarily a law firm. But if you're talking about a judicial foreclosure, however, I don't want to make an across-the-board statement. I just really want to note that we are seeing more judicial foreclosures than non-judicial. But I think one of the facts is that, and we've seen this in other instances, that a law firm is involved and they charge truly unbelievable legal fees in order to process the judicial foreclosure. In any event, this is what happened to her. So her argument through her attorney, she did hire an attorney, was that the judicial foreclosure could not proceed because the lien recorded against her property was invalid. The argument being it was invalid because the law firm, that is to say the association acting through the law firm, did not observe or comply with all of the noticing requirements that are in state statute. And it's at this point, Shu, that I would pause and point out that noticing requirements and the requirement for dispute resolution, these are elements of the legislation that we have worked on since 2002. In other words, this is where we started. We started in 2002. Our first bill was AB 2289, carried by Christine Kehoe from San Diego, which has 5,000 homeowner associations and government at the county. And up to that point in time, there were, believe it or not, no noticing requirements whatever that had to be delivered to homeowners in general or a homeowner in particular. In other words, the association could carry through with a non-judicial or judicial foreclosure without any notice whatever to the homeowner. There was a requirement that there be a collections policy promulgated, but even now, it's rare that that happens. But nonetheless, this is where we started in 2002 with our very first bill that homeowners had to be given notice of the association's intent to foreclose, of the intent to record an assessment lien, and that the homeowners had to be apprised of the collections policy and given 30 days notice of the association's intent to record the assessment lien. So this is the very first bill that we carried in the legislature, we sponsored, we got it signed into law. So one of the things I want to underscore this morning, Shu, is that we are now starting to see in these appellate decisions the fruits of these labors that began long ago. In other words, to get consumer protection legislation, that's difficult enough to get it through the legislature, but the payoff, so to speak, is to start to see these bills, the statutes, now emerging in appellate decisions. So it's very gratifying to see this. And it is also, if I can offer this to advocates in other states throughout the country, it does take an enormous amount of patience to get a bill through a state legislature, but then to start to see these statutes become the foundation or the bedrock for appellate decisions. And the important thing about this case is that this case has been certified for publication, which means it applies not only to the Arlene Diamond case, but it now applies, because it's certified for publication, to other assessment collection cases throughout the state.
In California, right.
In California.
You know, Marjorie, you've been working on legislation for a long time. Did you run into a whole lot of opposition when you tried to get some of this stuff passed?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the association industry, and I don't want to stray from the Diamond case because I have a number of other things to say about it.
Okay.
But I would just say very briefly that, yes, of course, the association industry is extremely active in Sacramento, the state capital. They are very well financed. They have offices there. You and I have talked about the segments of the association industry that are active there.
Oh, yeah.
COI is one, ECHO, the Executive Council of Homeowners, is another, and the property managers have their own trade group that lobby in Sacramento. And also, there is now a fourth entity, which you are probably familiar with, Associa, which emanates out of Texas.
I don't want
to stray from the case, because we carried a number of bills that had to do with the noticing issue. Noticing meaning the homeowner must be fully informed throughout the entire assessment collection and lien process, the notice of default process, the foreclosure process. In other words, this has to be a visible process.
But you see, what I don't understand, Marjorie, is what they could possibly, object to. You're being told that, hey, we're going to sell your house on the courthouse steps. You know, why don't you do something to protect yourself? It's just a no-brainer to me.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I said it's a no-brainer to me when all you're doing is trying to make sure that the homeowner is aware of it and has an opportunity to do something to protect their property.
Well, I think, Shu, that this has always been part of the debt collection strategy, is to make the process not visible, incomprehensible, confusing, so that the homeowner does not have an opportunity to challenge it. But I want to get to the important point about this case so that we don't lose the important point. First of all, as I said, we sponsored these many bills, and I can give you the list, or people can come to our website and see the list. The noticing requirements of 2289 was only the very first step. Another important bill that we sponsored was SB 137, which established that certain thresholds had to be reached before the association could use foreclosure as a collections tool. But here's what the court said in the Diamond case. And that is, the interesting thing is, the association, through its attorney, openly acknowledged that they had not followed all of the noticing requirements. They said that in the response to the complaint.
Yeah, I read that.
But their argument was, even though we didn't follow it to the letter of the law, we followed it substantially. So we were in substantial compliance. So that's the key expression. And the court said no. And then it means substantial compliance is inadequate. And this is why homeowners throughout the state should be applauding the court, because the court, in its very detailed analysis, said the legislature wouldn't have gone to all this trouble of putting these statutes in place unless they expected that there would be a actual compliance with the statutes. Substantial is insufficient. The legislature intended that the statutes would be complied with to the letter of the law. And therefore, the court determined that the initial lien recorded against her property was invalid, and it would not allow the foreclosure to go forward. It was reversed. This case was originally heard in the lower court, which agreed that substantial compliance was sufficient. But the appellate court said no, substantial compliance is not sufficient. So again, what I want to emphasize is that we are seeing the fruits of our legislative efforts in California come to light here. And we are seeing these statutes become the bedrock of these important appellate decisions.
Well, congratulations. That's really something to be very proud of, Marjorie. You've done an awesome job.
Thank you very much, Shu, but I want to emphasize that getting legislation passed, getting it to the legislature and signed into law, this is not a one-person effort. And that is, I have talked to advocates in other states about this. It's a long, slow process, and key to it is building alliances and building coalitions with other consumer protection organizations. Sometimes those are senior organizations. For example, AARP was one of our important allies in getting SB 137 through the legislature and signed into law. So allies take many different forms. Senior organizations, consumer protection organizations, other nonprofits, other housing organizations that are working on housing issues, all are potential allies. And so the foundation for this work for advocates is, first of all, to build alliances.
That's an excellent point, Marjorie, because people tend to get very fed up and very frustrated when they go to the legislature and they say, okay, this is what we need. And, of course, they get slammed down by the industry, who thinks that, you know, why bother letting you know that we're going to take your house? That's just going to put a roadblock in our way. It's so much easier, quicker, and cheaper to just get out of the way and let us take it and move on.
Well, one of the things I would underscore here is that, again, getting legislation signed into law involves many steps. One is building coalitions, finding partners. The other is an equally painstaking process of educating lawmakers.
Yeah.
Particularly on the foreclosure issue. I remember when we first started this work and legislators didn't believe that associations had the power to foreclose. I mean, they absolutely denied it.
Yeah.
So we had to bring, and this is where the data collection comes in, and plays a very important role, is showing that, in fact, foreclosure does take place and is extremely injurious. So the broader point I'm making here is that legislators have to be educated along with their staff. And our first efforts, even though we had great legislators working on these issues, doesn't mean the bills don't fail the first time around, which is exactly what happened. We had two very good bills on foreclosure that established the thresholds, and one of them we knew was going to get vetoed by the governor, so it didn't go to the governor. The other bill went to the governor, and he did veto that. Then we tried again the following year, and then the bill got through. So again, it's a matter of patience in getting legislation.
How do you stay motivated, and how do you stay on track? Because I've seen a lot of people just quit and give up.
Again, I think it's first of all a matter of realizing what's involved. I mean, patience is definitely involved. And that's why you want partners. Because having important partners like AARP or consumer protection organizations means that you're not inclined to give up because you don't want to let your partners down. So, and sometimes partners can take up the slack when, you know, you start to run out of energy. So, you know, realizing that this is a long-term project is one important thing. But then the other is you're doing this for homeowners. Advocates are working on behalf of homeowners. And, you know, as we did this work, we heard from more and more homeowners, so that's the other important inspiration, that homeowners come to us with unbelievable cases.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's a way of getting energized, to realize that this work is being done on behalf of persons who are defenseless, many of whom are seniors, many of whom are disabled, all of whom, it's the rare exception, have just been treated unfairly. And I think the Arlene Diamond case is a very good example. Now, again, I would urge your listeners, these cases are posted on our website. They can also just be Googled. I would urge your listeners to actually read the appellate ruling for the facts of the case, the arguments presented by the court, and you will see at the end of the case why it's an important one.
Why don't we take this opportunity to let people know what your website is, the URL?
Oh, thank you. Yes, the website is www.calhomelaw.org. Again, that's www.calhomelaw.org. And we would welcome visitors to the website.
And you can also sign up for newsletters, is that correct?
Yes. We send out what we call news briefs. And the Diamond case was the subject of the news brief, and then the other case that we're going to talk about was also the subject of a news brief. And that case, if you want to turn to it now, is an elections case. Would you like to turn to that now?
Absolutely, I want to turn to it now. But before we do, we're talking to Marjorie Murray. Marjorie Murray is the very energetic and incredibly successful founder and president of the California Homeowner Association Law, and a good friend of On the Commons. And she's been on before, but not for a long, long time. So I'm thrilled to have her here and back with us. And so, okay, now you've got another case to tell us about, Marjorie.
Yes, the second case, and I will mention that here at the center, we have priority issues, as we call them, which were set by our board long ago. And our first priority issue is assessment, collection, and foreclosure. Our second priority issue is association elections, because elections in the association environment, as in any other environment, elections are the vehicle for the changing of the guard, and for, meaning the board directors, and for making critical decisions within the association. For example, the levying of special assessments or the amending of governing documents. And I want to underscore here that amending governing documents is even more critical now in California, because the Law Revision Commission, let me back up here a second, your listeners may already know that in California, associations are governed by a body of laws called Davis-Sterling, named for the two lawmakers who codified the laws governing associations. That took place in 1985. More recently, the California Law Revision has recodified all of these statutes, renumbered them. They claim that they made no substantive changes to the statutes, but everyone, including us, is still studying the recodified statutes to make sure that none of the important consumer protections that we put in place over the last dozen years have been eviscerated or deleted altogether. So as a result of this recodification, the association industry is telling most of California's 50,000 associations that they need to overhaul their governing documents.
Yeah.
So this is a boondoggle for law firms.
Yeah.
And it's also an opportunity, if there are consumer protections within the governing documents themselves, it's an opportunity to weaken or even delete those.
Yes.
So this case is called Wittenberg v. Beachwalk Homeowners Association, and it does have to do with amending governing documents. And the facts of the case are that the board wanted the governing documents amended, and as you know, in associations, the board is typically in the driver's seat in terms of preparing the language of the ballot to be sent out. That's a critical power. And boards typically will send out a statement to all the homeowners saying, here's the ballot and we want you to vote yes. Well, in this instance, the board did exactly that. They wanted homeowners to vote yes, and they sent out ballot materials stating that. Well, there were opponents among the homeowners to the ballot measure. And I'd have to stop and think for a second. In 2005, we worked on a set of statutes. Actually, starting in 2004, we started working on elections legislation because we recognized how important it is to make sure that homeowners have a voice and homeowners have power during association elections. And one of the provisions of the statute was that during a board election and during a ballot election or an election to amend governing documents, that homeowners have a voice. Well, how are they going to have a voice except through association media? And so that's what the law says, that there must be equal access given to opponents in an association election. So during the Beachwalk election, and I'll point out that it wasn't just one election, it was three elections, the board kept repeating the election because it couldn't get the ballot measure passed to amend the governing documents. And I know your listeners will be very familiar with this tactic.
Mm-hmm.
That the board can't get the result it wants, so it keeps repeating the election. And with each election, the opponents to the measure, Paul Wittenberg was one of them, kept repeatedly trying to get access to the association newsletter, the bulletin boards, and they also wanted to rent out common area meeting space so that they could have a town hall on the issue. And the association kept blocking and denying them. Now, the association board was the only entity that had the authority to write up material for the newsletters, to give permission to rent the common area meeting space, to post material on the bulletin boards. In other words, the homeowners were blocked at every step of the way. So, again, this went to the trial court, and the trial court agreed with the association and said the association did nothing wrong. But the homeowners took the matter to the appeals court, and the appeals court, again, in a very detailed analysis, said that the association was doing much more than simply sending out information about the ballot measure. They were engaging in advocacy. They were urging a yes vote during each election. Therefore, opponents of the ballot measure, namely these two homeowners who brought the case, were denied their rights under the election statutes, which we got put in place during 2005-2006. And so the ruling of this court was that the association had violated the law. Now, the sticking point here, and this part is not yet decided, the appeals court said the issue of whether or not to void the election had to be sent back down to the trial court.
That hasn't been decided yet?
That hasn't yet been decided, and this has an interesting history. And again, this is where legislation and the patience required for legislation comes into play. That when we were working on these bills, we wanted there to be a built-in penalty, meaning if the statute was violated, that the election was automatically voided. And this called for a compromise because the association industry wasn't going to let the bill get through at all unless the provision of automatic voiding of the election was modified. And the resulting language was that the court would decide whether or not to void the election based on the violation of the statute. So one of the interesting things, however, about Wittenberg is that the industry recognized the critical importance of this case and of the appellate ruling. This came out of Orange County. Let me check this. It came out of Orange County. Which is Southern California. And the law firm of Adams Kessler, which is one of the biggest association law firms in the state, wanted the appellate ruling overturned. And so they petitioned the California Supreme Court to rehear the case and to overturn it.
Oh, really?
Pardon?
Oh, really? They wanted the appellate thing overturned.
They wanted this, the Wittenberg ruling from the 4th District Appellate Court overturned. We wrote, and this is one of the other things that we spend our time doing, or we have been recently, is preparing amicus letters, either to the appeals court or, else, in this case, to the Supreme Court, asking that it deny the Adams-Kessler petition, which it did. So the California Supreme Court refused to hear the Adams-Kessler petition, and so the Wittenberg ruling stands. It's been certified for publication, which is
awesome.
Extremely important.
Yes, that's neat.
And again, the foundation for this ruling are these important election pieces of election legislation that we worked on in 2005-2006. And when I say worked on, I want to be clear that we are talking not just about writing letters. We're talking about sitting in endless meetings with the association industry and negotiating every word and every comma and the placement of every paragraph in order to devise the statute. Because, and this is another element that advocates in other states may be interested in, some lawmakers don't want to carry a bill unless it's what's called a consensus bill, meaning that all the stakeholders in it have negotiated the bill, because they don't want the bill coming to committee and a huge fight ensuing before the committee. They want all of the issues and arguments and debates to have taken place ahead of time. So that's what we did. So the statutes, which are now in the California codes governing association elections, those were negotiated. But the interesting thing here, Shu, is it doesn't mean that the industry is going to comply with them. They will find ways, I'm sorry to say, even though they sat in the meetings with us and negotiated the statutes, to find what they conceive as loopholes to weaken it. For example, in the Wittenberg case, one of their arguments was that the board was not engaging in advocacy when it sent out a letter urging all homeowners to vote yes. Their argument was, we're only providing information. And the court said, no, you're not.
No.
You have gone well beyond information. You are engaging in advocacy, and therefore you have triggered what is called the equal access provision of the statute, meaning opponents have now equal access to association media. And there was plenty of evidence to buttress that anyway, because the homeowners, you know, attempted these other efforts, for example, to rent the common area meeting space, and that was denied by the board. So the opponents of the ballot measure had absolutely no voice. And, you know, viewed another way, apart from the statute, this is also a First Amendment issue.
Absolutely.
In other words, they really didn't have, the opponents did not have a way to express their opinion.
They didn't have a way to express their opinion, but they weren't also allowed to gather, to talk. Now, I can understand saying, all right, we've got a building that we've got to heat, and we've got to control the use of that building, the meeting room. They should have let them have it. I'm not arguing that. But I was reading the case, Marjorie, and they even went and tried to get permission to meet on the greenbelt, which I am assuming is an outdoor grassy area.
Yes, that's correct.
And so they're not allowed to meet there. I mean, that's common property, right?
Yes, and not only that, they actually handed over rent. They handed over cash.
To meet on the grassy area?
I think it was to rent meeting space.
Yeah, the room, $90. They charged them $90 for the meeting room.
Right. The request to meet was taken by the property manager to the board, and the board denied that as well. So that's a measure of the determination by the board working under the advice of the law firm to deny the opponent a voice. So the important thing here, again, is that the opinion is based on statutes that we have gotten in place that were carried by energetic lawmakers that were worked out over a long period of time. And so that is one of the messages, if I could characterize it that way, to advocates in other states, not to give up, because it does take a long time. You have to know existing law inside and out. It takes a long time to educate lawmakers, and of course, in California, lawmakers change regularly, so
yeah.
The job of education is never done.
Yeah.
And it requires something close to infinite patience. But what keeps you going is building alliances with like-minded organizations and also keeping in mind that you are doing this on behalf of homeowners who are essentially, in many cases, defenseless. So we do what we can in Sacramento, and we are now doing more work recently in the courts, particularly the appellate courts.
So by doing more work, I assume you're talking about the amicus briefs.
Correct.
And pretty much educating the judges, right?
Well, that's another whole issue, educating the judiciary. That's a separate project. But I will tell you that a lot of good cases have been coming out of the Orange County appellate court. And now another excellent case, the Diamond case, out of the Santa Clara appellate district. So, and we also have another couple of, these are trial court cases, so they don't have precedential value, but I think very gradually, again, this is like the legislature, a matter of getting the word to the judiciary. And, you know, that happens in various ways. We don't have control over that. We don't have a separate program for that. But I think gradually the word is percolating. It's either up or down. I don't know which.
So, but you're seeing that the tide is changing. Is that what you're telling me? That the tide is changing? Because there was a period where the homeowners seemed to lose every case. And if you go to CAI's website, you see all of those lawsuits just, you know, lining up like a whole bunch of soldiers standing there. Hey, 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 we won. But I think that I'm hearing more and more homeowner wins.
In other states as well?
Yes. In Virginia, for instance, we've had a number of wins. In California, you've got two great cases over here. And in some respects, you've won on some issues that, that Twin Rivers was all about.
The amendment issue?
Yeah, the elections and meeting and getting together and talking about things and discussing political issues.
Well, that's an interesting point, Shu, because, as I say, the Wittenberg case was not framed as a First Amendment issue, which is a very difficult way to frame issues, because then you get into the whole, you get into a briar's nest of, you know, associations are not governments, and, you know, I mean, I've heard association industry people go so far as to say that
you gave them up,
that people basically abdicated their right to constitutional protections when they purchase property in a homeowner association. But so we don't want to get into that kind of argument. It's a much easier argument to say, okay, California has these very important consumer protection statutes during association elections of any type, meaning electing board directors, amending governing documents, levying special assessments, or increases in regular assessments, and, you know, just frame it according to the existing statute, state statute, rather than getting into the constitutional issues. So that's a much easier argument.
It is an easier argument. I know on the fining issue, we make sure that we do use the constitutional argument, and that's, you know, Gilman talks about the U.S. Constitution. And we've got to get away from the fact that people willingly signed away their rights, because nobody did that. You ask anyone, did you say that you really don't want the constitutional protections? And they'll say, well, no, of course not. And I think it was Evan who said, have them sit down and sign, each one of them. I give up the right to free speech. I give up the right to political campaigning. I give up the right, you know, have them put all of this down and sign up on each one of them. They're not going to do it.
Yeah. This is, I'll return to what I said early on about the noticing requirements in connection with assessment collection, that the strategy is to make things invisible. And the idea that people have signed away their constitutional rights, this is meant to be an invisible signing away. I mean, if people thought about it, they would, of course, say no. But it makes it easier for the industry to argue that, well, of course, you've entered into this private association where rules govern and constitutional rights are suspended. That's because nobody ever sat you down and talked to you about it. So I think it's the key strategy there, again, is invisibility.
And so we put it out on the skyline and we shine a bright light on it.
So we shine a bright light on it. And one of the things I will emphasize about both these cases is the detailed analysis of both issues in both cases. There is a detailed analysis in Diamond, detailed analysis in Wittenberg, laying out the thinking of the court. And they did a close reading of the statutes and a close reading of the case and a close reading of the industry's arguments. And then supported the statute and dismissed the arguments offered by the associations. No, I was just going to say, so again, I would re-urge listeners to read both cases, to read the arguments, and for your California listeners in particular, to take heart from both these cases and also from the fact that we continue to work in Sacramento on behalf of homeowners to ensure that consumer protections are in place. And one of the things, if we have a minute, Shu, I will tell you that elections were a huge issue in Sacramento this year. There were two bills, both having to do with elections. The first one, AB 1360, would have allowed associations to use electronic vote or internet voting in elections. And experts in internet voting, like Common Cause, and the Verified Voting Foundation and the California Secretary of State were up in arms about this bill.
Oh, really?
Up in arms. And
so that's obviously not one of your bills.
we worked like mad to defeat that bill.
To kill it so you... Cool, okay.
So, no, electronic voting. There's no way to verify a homeowner's vote during internet voting. And again, I refer back to these election statutes, which lay out all of the procedures to be used during an election. But if you hire a vendor or a purveyor of electronic and internet voting, it's the purveyor, the vendor, that sets the voting protocols. And those protocols are not the ones that you're going to find in the statute.
And, of course, they're members of CAI.
They are, yes.
Okay.
They are industry members.
Okay.
So that was a battle royal. Now, it's not clear if they are going to try to revive that bill next session. It's now what's called a two-year bill, so they may bring it back. However, they're going to be facing the same opponents, which are Common Cause, Verified Voting, and the California Secretary of State. And then the other bill was a bill which would have deleted all of the consumer protections now in place for what are called small associations. That means associations with 15 units or less. So there wouldn't be an inspector of elections. There would be no way to ensure secrecy of the ballot. So intimidation would be very easy to impose. So those were the two major bills this session. And the second bill on for small elections and small associations, that may also be brought back, but I doubt it. But I doubt it.
Margie, would you think that it would be helpful to have, for instance, a national platform or a list that perhaps different states might try to get enacted and say, look at what they've done in California. They've got these consumer protections in place. I think once the statute is, or once it's a law someplace, do you think it's easier to get it to be a law someplace else?
I really can't speak to that, Shu. I'll tell you why. Because the states are so different. The political makeup is different. I mean, I think what we have in some states is templates or model statutes. Like, I think the California statutes can provide a model that can be used in other states.
That's what I'm talking about, is saying, okay, look, California saw fit to protect the homeowners who live in associations by enacting the following laws. So it's not like they're inventing something brand new. It's a model. It's a template. It's been used. It's a law in some places. Why not use that as a template and say, okay, here are some good laws from around the country, and we have a whole list of them here. And they've been passed in some states. Why not pass them in others?
Well, there's no question but that we can learn from one another. And but just speaking for California, the statutes that we have gotten into the California codes are readily available. And I know that statutes have been passed elsewhere in Texas, I'm thinking of. I think there were some in, I can't speak to Virginia, you're the expert on that, Shu, but also Maryland. And, you know, I think it's also important to look not only at the legislation that's gotten signed into law, but just the legislation that has been attempted.
Yeah.
Because there are often very good ideas in there. It's just that the time wasn't right, or the political makeup of the particular state legislature wasn't the right makeup. Or you can get, as I said before, when we were working on the foreclosure bills, we can get the bill through the legislature, but then you've got the wrong governor. So, for sure, these legislative efforts and campaigns can serve as models for advocates across the country.
Because I know the industry does it. They've got their uniform common interest laws that they've managed to get through in several states.
Right.
And, you know, but the homeowners tend to struggle. I think, you know, you sent me a list of stuff, and I think one of the things, the points that you made on there that's very, very important is courtesy.
Oh, there is no question about that. And I can just say a couple of words about that. And courtesy goes hand-in-hand with patience. As I said, this has been a long-term effort of ours to get legislation through the legislature and signed by the governor. And you also, you really have to know what you're talking about when you go in to talk to a legislator.
Yeah, yeah, you
courtesy,
do.
Courtesy, it's very easy to lose your credibility in the legislature.
Right.
If you don't have the right comportment, and if you lack courtesy, I mean, that goes hand in hand with the patients.
Marjorie, thank you so very much for joining us today. I've really enjoyed having you on. I'm in awe of everything that you have accomplished in California. And I just want to let people know that your website is calhomelaw.org. Be sure to check it out.
Well, thank you very much, Sue. It's been a pleasure talking to you, largely because we have these two appellate decisions which confirm the legislative work that we have been doing in the past dozen years. And my single message to advocates is that you're doing important work in state capitals across the country. It is possible to do the work. It does take some patience. It takes allies. And just to remember that you're doing it on behalf of homeowners in your state.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect. All my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs. Life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos. Someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid. All your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone. United, we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine. And enjoy those precious golden years. Stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell
why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.